ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
A confession. A memory. A lie. What if all three could be wrong? Forensic is a new series from All in the Mind, unpacking the hidden psychology of crime solving. Why innocent people confess? How memories can be rewritten? The science behind true crime. All in the Mind, Forensic. Search for All in the Mind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Countries without the rule of law often have two sets of books. The official set that records what people will admit to and the unofficial set that records the truth. So worried is Australia's Bureau of Statistics about the official Australian National Accounts that it's begun pointing out they include only legally bought tobacco. If they included illegal tobacco sales, which the Bureau says are swelling, its estimates of economic growth would have been higher. Woolworths is now reporting two sets of sales figures. Investors are being told its income from sales climbed 5.9% in the year to April, but if it weren't for the collapse, the halving in sales of legal tobacco, its takings would have climbed 7.3%. So many Australians are turning to illegal tobacco, and so quickly, that it's making the Commonwealth budget repeatedly wrong. 3 years ago, when Treasurer Jim Chalmers announced 3 years' worth of big hikes in the tax on tobacco, his budget said it would push up takings from $12.7 billion to $14.2 billion. Instead, they collapsed to $4.1 billion. Somewhere along the way, we've pushed normally law-abiding Australians into the hands of the black market. What happened? And is there any way back? Welcome to The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin, and our guest this week, Commonwealth Treasury Tragic. He follows its moves closely and has been following with increasing alarm its inability to forecast what its measures have been doing to tobacco sales, Chris Richardson, formerly of Deloitte Access Economics, and Ed Jegasothy, who teaches in the School of Public Health at the University of Sydney and gave evidence this month to the Senate inquiry into Australia's illegal tobacco crisis. Welcome, Chris, and welcome, Ed.
Many thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
Before we start, I want to ask each of you, Ed first, whether you receive money from or have ever received money from the tobacco industry.
No, I don't receive any funds from the tobacco or nicotine industries. I've never have, and I have no intention to.
Chris?
Same here. It's very much a no, never a single cent. In fact, I was on the board of a big business and we chose to ban big tobacco as a customer.
We've had, Chris, extraordinary success in reducing smoking. Not long ago, in 1980, one third of Australian adults smoked regularly, one in three. Cigarette smoke was everywhere. By the year 2000, we'd got it down to one in five, and then it dived further. As best as we can tell, it's probably one in 10, maybe 12% if you add in vaping. One of the things we've done in pursuit of that aim, especially in the past 16 or so years, has been to ramp up cigarette taxes really, really aggressively. What did we do?
And the basic idea was pretty simple. Smoking is very bad for us, so try to convince people to smoke less by raising the price of smoking, by raising taxes. Kevin Rudd had a summit back in 2008, soon after he was elected. Roll on to 2010, and it started to happen. Tobacco taxes went up 25%. In 2013, there was another round, four lots of 12.5% announced over the following 4 years. 2017, same again, another four lots of 12.5%.
Let's see, if we add those up, we're getting, because of the way that increases on increases work, I think we're getting to a doubling already.
We're getting to way more than that. You've already mentioned Jim Chalmers' three further increases of 5% ahead of wage growth. If you look at today's tax on cigarettes versus that in 2010. For every dollar of something in 2010, the average price, the consumer price index, is now about $1.50. But for this tax, it's $5.83, a really remarkable increase. If you look at a pack of 20, and if I include the GST as well, the tax is $33.62 on that pack.
And we should be clear, these measures were put in place by Kevin Rudd and Wayne Swan, Tony Abbott and Joe Hockey, and Anthony Albanese and Jim Chalmers. They're bipartisan, if you like, relying on the advice of the Health Department and the Treasury Department. What did these officials think would happen, Ed? What did the Health Department expect that first big hike, the one in 2010, 25%? What did they expect it to do to smoking?
That large tax increase in 2010 was expected to have an immediate jolt to the smoking rate. In the impact statement, they expected a 2 to 3 percentage point decline in smoking due to the tax. The rate of smoking had already been in decline, has been in decline for decades, so they expected it to accelerate the decline in smoking prevalence after that.
And what did happen?
There wasn't really a clear acceleration. It's not necessarily certain that indicates that there wasn't an effect, but there was not an acceleration in the decline in smoking prevalence.
Chris, what happened to revenue? Every one of these five tax hikes, and there was another one as well because they started increasing cigarette tax every 6 months by wages, which normally grow faster than prices. Every one of those was expected to not only cut smoking but bring in more revenue. What happened?
Oops. In 2019-20, after a handful of years where the tax take had risen very fast on tobacco, it hit $16 billion. And to make the obvious point, if the government gets that money, it can then do stuff with it. It can pay for a lot of things, or it can cut other taxes. $16 billion in 2019-20. The following year, it was still $14 billion. Then there were a couple of years at $12 billion, then $10 billion, then $7 billion. This year, this financial year, somewhere around four, and we had the federal budget a handful of days ago, they say that in 4 years' time, this tax that used to be a huge money spinner will be raising $2 billion.
It used to fund, not tied to it directly, of course, but half of JobSeeker, a fifth of the defence budget. If you lose $10 billion, you're losing something quite significant. How many budget forecasts have been wrong?
I would say at least eight. And to be fair, you know, that the phrase about how do you go bankrupt or gradually then suddenly. Gradually the forecasts were not working, and then suddenly you saw revenue just drop off a cliff.
Have we discovered a Laffer curve? Arthur Laffer was an advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, Reagan, also Margaret Thatcher in the UK. He's famous, infamous for sketching out a graph on a napkin in a restaurant. And it suggested that if you increase tax far enough, you'll reach a point where you collect less revenue rather than more. He toured the world promoting the idea.
I mean, let's imagine I raise tax rates to 120% here in Australia. I mean, how long would you work? And if the rates are fair and reasonable, they'll pay them. But if they aren't, they're going to try to get around them.
He's made a submission to the Senate inquiry now underway, drawing what looks like a Laffer curve, using real data from Australia's tobacco excise. Is he right? Was he always right that you can increase a tax far enough to get to the point where it gets you less revenue, not more?
Well, oops again, Peter. Yes, it's always been theoretically possible to have a tax so high that people don't do the thing that you're taxing. Obviously, some people gave up smoking, you know, because of the massive increase in tax on legal tobacco. And that was a Laffer-like reaction, if you like. But the other thing was that simply a whole bunch of people shifted to smoking untaxed tobacco, the black market. And that's, I suspect, what has brought the Laffer curve here to Australia. And definitely, no laughing matter. These little beasties are very rarely seen in the wild.
I want to jump in there. While there's sort of a surface resemblance between this and the Laffer curve, it's important to remember that the purpose of this tax was to create a Laffer curve, right? The purpose of the tax wasn't to maximize revenue, wasn't finding the optimal tax rate that maximized how much revenue they could pull from smokers. It was to drive down smoking rates. So ideally, you would see this pattern.
This is a success on the face of it.
So success should be in driving down smoking prevalence. But however, that has not been the case.
You've tracked what did happen to the black market. What did you see and at what time? Those stores seem to have appeared from almost nowhere and they seem to be operating in plain sight.
Yes, there was a real ramp up in the availability of illicit tobacco from about 2020 onwards, which coincided with the steepest increases of the tobacco tax, but also coincided with the availability of cheap illicit vapes as well. So it's these two products in tandem with the same logistical network, the same suppliers providing these two products at the same time.
Which may have also driven people to these stores. Do we have any idea of the extent to which they now supply tobacco, the extent to which ordinary Australians, ordinary smokers, are now breaking the law?
So the Illicit Tobacco and E-Cigarette Commissioner estimated in her report last year that it was up to 60% of tobacco which was supplied by the illicit market. And that's in line with that tax shortfall for 24-25 financial year.
In line with what Woolworths reports too.
Precisely. So that seems to check out. So up to 60% of tobacco is illicit, at least for that financial year. And on the vape side, it's almost all of it. So 96-odd% of the vapes are illicit.
Every second smoker is breaking the law. Almost every vapor is breaking the law. Do you think this would have happened? It's impossible to tell had we not had that series of dramatic increases in tax on cigarettes.
Worth noting, we don't, by definition, have magnificent numbers on the black market here in Australia or in the rest of the world. But to the extent there are indicators, it would appear that this has been a bigger and sharper decline in legal tobacco consumption than you're seeing in other nations around the world. That would suggest that tax is part of the story here. Worth also noting that the basic point is, you know, people will try to do the right thing. You know, if you were looking at two packets and they knew one was legal and one was illegal, they would try to do the right thing. But because we created the conditions for such an amazing black market, what people do over a longer period of time is what other people do. And as more and more people switched to the black market, others became increasingly comfortable to do the same.
It becomes acceptable to break the law.
Yeah, and we've lost, I mean, it is one of the many, many challenges in this, as we have dithered, is perhaps the nicest thing you can say, you know, as it's become clear that the collapse in the legal market was rocketing along at an amazing pace. And one of the reasons it's harder to go back to chuck a reverse Laffer is because people are now very comfortable buying the black market stuff.
And I think also because these are actually just legal products you can buy in any supermarket, any shop, any servo, the fact that the main differentiating feature is the price also makes that threshold much, much lower.
You know, in Economics One, Chris, my economics lecturer referred to a ratchet effect and then he spelled it out just to make clear that he was saying ratchet. That seems to be what we have here, which is you can change behaviour in one direction, you can turn people into lawbreakers. You can't necessarily unturn them as easily. And what to do is what we're about to discuss on The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin. My guest this week, two people examining from different perspectives what successive governments and successive budgets have done to smoking and smokers, economist Chris Richardson and public health researcher Ed Jekasothy. Ed, one of the awful things that's flowed from the switch to illegal tobacco is an upsurge in violence, assaults, murders, firebombing of tobacco outlets, especially in Victoria. Was this at all predictable?
Sadly, yes.
And was it predicted? Actually,
it was predicted. Yes, one of my good colleagues, criminologist James Martin at Deakin Uni, wrote about this in 2018. It's also just sort of historical fact that when there are customs duties and excises, that there are actors trying to circumvent them. So smuggling has been a long time issue when it comes to anything that has customs duties attached to it. When you have such a big price differential, when you have these enormous taxes, and of course we've had examples of prohibition in the past in the United States, of course, when there are these big incentives to enter the illicit market, without the access to legal protection, dispute resolution, systemic violence naturally emerges as a means for criminal actors to enforce informal contracts. So it's certainly predictable that the illicit market would emerge and certainly predictable that would result in violence.
I should point out, though, that we don't have stores on corner after corner of our cities selling heroin or anything else illegal like that.
Yes, I mean, the number of stores is estimated around 40,000 stores in Australia.
What?
Which is, yes. And at the peak of the heroin crisis in Australia, there were no more than 30,000 consumers. So that's the sort of the scale or the difference in scale of nicotine versus heroin.
Might we be seeing, Chris, a whole shadow economy, a shadow legal system, as Ed just said, enforced by violence? The Age newspaper reports that there's a cartel in Melbourne that limits retailers to $12 to $14 per pack, what they can charge, not more than that, not less. They can charge $18 to $20 in the inner city. They've been permitted a $5 increase because of supply problems in the Middle East. Are we almost creating a shadow financial system, a shadow legal system?
They can make more money if they are telling the sellers, the typically tobacconists, how much they can charge in a given spot. Right? You know, you can't go any lower than this, or indeed more than that. And that combination gives extra profits to organised crime. And my fear is that they are moving, you know, cross-subsidising as they move into other markets and do other things. This may have started in tobacco, but it ends in tears on a number of fronts.
I think that's right. I think what we saw with the prohibition in the United States, where the amount of wealth that was accrued by those gangs corrupted institutions and maintained the dominance of those organized crimes for decades after prohibition was actually repealed. So this is my biggest fear with this issue, is the tens of billions of dollars that have been funneled into organized crime, which will weaken our institutions and potentially cause corruption and ongoing crises for the country.
Ed, we wouldn't want to be where we are. But given that we are, what should we do about it?
Look, it's a really difficult situation that we're in at the moment. The actual illicit market itself undermines all these public health interventions in terms of the plain packaging and graphic warnings, age restrictions. We've lost that social and legal license.
You're almost saying that by repeatedly increasing the tax on tobacco products, we've reached the point where it's harming public health.
That's right. The tax has created this black market, which is undermining many of the other policies.
Because you don't know what's in a cigarette that you buy. Well, you probably don't know what's in them anyway, but they're more likely to contain anything.
Yeah, that's right. All cigarettes are harmful. I'm not saying one's more harmful necessarily than the other, but certainly there's no consumer protections on any of these products, vapes or otherwise. And that's what we want to protect people from. And the fact that we've lost control of this market means that gaining control of the market should be our utmost priority for tobacco control, for public health, which means putting everything on the table.
Enforcement sounds like a good idea, but to state the obvious, Ed, is enforcement much more difficult when a problem is widespread? We couldn't enforce Australia's income tax system if everyone broke the law. As it is, very few people break the law and we need very few checks.
That's right. I think enforcement at this point can be counterproductive. Even if you broke down particular networks, that could create further competition, further violence, further incentives to enter the market.
How would greater enforcement lead to greater violence?
So when you were to close down particular shops and close down particular networks, that creates power vacuums, which could be occupied because demand is still there when the price is still so high. Those vacuums can be filled by other actors.
What would you do, Chris?
Cry. I know we can't turn back time, but it would have been much easier to fix a year ago, much easier again 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 years ago. And I call it dithering. That's because I shouldn't call it what it really is. We have stunningly screwed up in recent times by sitting on our hands. So on enforcement, I think the weakest bit of the chain, the bit that can potentially be changed the most, is really, really limit where you can sell cigarettes. I would describe that as supermarkets and not much else.
You would let Woolworths sell them, Coles sell them, but none of those, no convenience store, no matter how legitimate.
You would have to have convenience stores able to register the license, basically, because there are plenty of places that aren't well served. On the other side of the equation, until a month ago, I consistently said, all right, you know, try to fix enforcement, don't touch the tax. We are now so deeply, deeply in this hole. It will be so hard to stop handing organised crime the amount of money that we are doing and all the other things that we're getting here. I would cut the tax per cigarette by 40 cents. That would take us back to where it was 4 years ago.
It would undo the Chalmers increases.
Yeah, and you know, is that enough? Well, this still leaves a very large gap between the cost of legal and illegal. But unless we have an absolutely red-hot go at both enforcement and tax, we're giving up and we are losing lots as we give that up.
Ed Canada did this, slashed its tax on tobacco in an effort to combat the black market. What happened and are there lessons for us?
So Canada had an emerging black market issue in the early 90s. In 94, they cut their tax in the attempt to address it. So they ramped up enforcement and cut the tax. They did actually get it under control. There's a few differences in what was going on there compared to here. They had a higher smoking rate. The actual illicit market was run by the actual legitimate tobacco industry, where they were just shipping it over the border to the US, where a lower tax than shipping it back into Canada, so circumventing the tax that way. So that's a different situation to what we have here. And it's not clear to what extent price was the differentiator, but certainly it was the motivation for the tobacco industry at the time. Here it's a bit different, but it did happen. So the tax cut plus enforcement did precede them getting the black market under control, and then they raised the taxes again after that.
Ed, you're not calling, as Chris is at this stage, for a cut in the excise. You're told the Senate you'd like the whole thing examined before proceeding. But if we did, if we reduced the illegal share, you know, got it down well below 50%, and I suppose a byproduct of that was more smoking. I mean, it's an awful choice. What would you accept?
Look, it's an awful choice. But however, unfortunately, at the moment, cigarettes are actually cheaper than they've ever been. You know, so if the purpose of the tax is to raise the price of cigarettes such that it deters people from smoking, that is just not the case at the moment. We've actually just got really cheap cigarettes all over the place. So getting that under control could potentially, and this is where the evidence needs to be put together, there probably is a place at which we could be where reducing the tax would actually make cigarettes actually more expensive by virtue of the legal market taking back over from the illicit market.
And you'd be prepared to accept some increase in the overall smoking rate?
Well, look,
I don't like asking you this because it's an awful choice.
But here's the question, right? So currently there are really cheap cigarettes all over the place. So if we are price sensitive and cheap cigarettes would increase the smoking rate, that is happening now. So the only difference is people at the margins, who potentially are people who don't want to buy illicit cigarettes but don't want to buy expensive legal cigarettes, and if it were cheaper, they would opt for the Woolies, going to a supermarket and buying legitimate cigarettes at a cheaper price. That is quite a small margin. I think that ship has already sailed.
And do you suspect that smoking rates might be increasing?
It's possible. There has been some evidence from Wayne Morgan surveys that show that at least it's flattened out, that the decline is no longer happening and there might be a slight increase. I wouldn't be surprised considering how widespread the availability of cheap tobacco is, but it's unclear at the moment.
Is part of the problem for both of you, and we saw this when you gave evidence at the Senate, Ed, that what you're saying is what big tobacco, the tobacco industry, has been saying. You're tarred with their brush. It's almost as if you're saying what they're saying, you must be wrong. How do you respond to that, Chris?
Grumpily. You know, as I said, we can keep doing nothing and stay on the path where we are, where it looks to me as if we are worsening our health, taking money away from governments that they can usefully use, and subsidising the rise of organised crime. And that is what we are doing. And yes, that is bad for big tobacco. Or we can fight back. That takes money back away from organised crime. If it works, it increases government revenue. And by making it effectively more expensive to smoke, it has a chance to restart the downtrend in smoking. But yes, that path is also good for big tobacco. You get choices in lives. And if what is good for big tobacco is also what we need for our health, for our government revenue, and for fighting organised crime, count me in.
Ed?
Look, it's a difficult question because we know what big tobacco has done. They cause an immense amount of harm globally and in Australia, and it gives me no pleasure to make points that they have made in the past. But we can't be throwing out their arguments purely because they said it. It's illogical, and I think it's part of the reason why we've ended up here. We've actually ignored their warnings just because they said it, not because they were actually valid. And it's gone on for too long, and we've seen the results of that.
As you gave evidence, 66 body bags were laid on the lawns in front of Parliament House representing the 66 Australians who die every day from tobacco. Do you wish you weren't making the same case as the industry?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, the case is that the tobacco industry is actually a small part of the Australian tobacco market. It's actually largely illicit and largely run by organised crime. So organised crime are now big tobacco in Australia.
I wish we had a good answer. It seems as if we don't. We can only try to look for solutions. Ed, Chris, thank you. Before we go, as is traditional on the program, anything to look out for in the days and weeks ahead? Chris, what will you be looking out for post-budget?
Well, the budget suggested some changes, and the polls would suggest the punters don't like them. And that worries me because Australia has been terrible at change, championed by either side of politics for a very long time. So I will be wondering, you know, ignore the detail of these changes. I'll be wondering whether Australia can change. We've been terrible at it for too long.
Ed.
Look, I've got a personal one. I'm looking forward to a trip to Bali with my family.
There are cheap cigarettes there, I think.
I couldn't possibly comment.
Although I didn't ask any of us this. I'm pretty sure you don't smoke. I don't, and I've never smoked. Thank you so much, Ed Jegasothy, who teaches in the School of Public Health at the University of Sydney and gave evidence to the Senate inquiry into Australia's illegal tobacco crisis, and Chris Richardson, who's been following budgets and tax decisions for even longer than me and is now an independent economist at Rich Insight. Thank you both so much.
Many thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
And thank you for listening. You can find our episodes on the ABC Listen app or live on ABC Radio National Thursdays. If you have any thoughts or questions or comments, no economic question is stupid. You can email us. Many of you have done that after our program about the budget and our program about capital gains tax. Among them is Penny, who writes, "I am so frustrated with the conversations about the property market that don't analyse exactly who's been buying houses over the past, say, 10 years. Penny lives near Margaret River. She says people with holiday homes are responsible for maybe every second or third purchase, and they're typically left empty 95% of the year. She wants to know who's buying properties, what they're doing with them. We do know the census tells us that about 1 million homes are empty at any one time. A lot of those are holiday properties, and we're getting a new census in August this year. That address, theeconomy.stupid@abc.net.au. Thanks to producer Sam Carmody. I'm Peter Martin. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.